thank you for being here. It's my understanding that the attorneys have checked in and are ready to go. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Wade Birdwell. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach, and I'm Bonnie Setters, the Chief Justice of the Court. I'll ask the clerk to please call the case. You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Lindsay Williams, and I am here today on behalf of Mr. Frazier, the appellant in this matter. Our appellant's brief raises three issues. The second and third issues are evidentiary, and I intend to rely on our brief for those unless the court has any questions. But I did want to focus my argument here today on this first issue, which has to do with the trial court's dismissal of a juror under Article 3629 of the Code of Criminal Procedure.
Would you get right to the point of whether or not it was waived?
Yes, Your Honor. The state has argued that the appellant did not object to the trial court's finding the juror disabled. On the record, the trial court specifically stated that she was dismissing the juror under Article 3629. She referenced the article and said that she would proceed without that juror. The defense attorney objected, stating that he objected to moving forward without the presence of the full 12-member jury. And the trial court later stated, your objection to releasing Larry Riviera, that's the dismissed juror, is also denied. So we submit that Rule 33.1 is satisfied, that the defense attorney made a specific objection to dismissing the juror, and the trial court made an adverse ruling on that. Now, there was this motion for new trial.
There was argument involved in that as well, and the argument was essentially that even if juror number 29 was included back in the 12 and they proceeded with the 12, that effectively the entire panel would be disabled because they would be worried about the possibility of exposure, et cetera, and they wouldn't be able to do that. That was the basis for the mistrial. So you're saying on the one hand, he's arguing, no, I need 12 to actually deliberate, and somehow alternatively, without saying alternatively, he's saying, well, no, actually, these 12 are completely compromised now, and they're not going to be able to deliberate at all, which is why I need the mistrial.
Yes, Your Honor. So I interpret the record differently. I interpret it as there's the dismissal of the juror based on being unvaccinated and subject to a 10-day quarantine period. Then we also have a motion for new trial. Apparently, some of the jurors had discussed with the trial court their concern because we had the original juror that tested positive and that was asymptomatic but received the positive test. So some of the jurors were concerned about having this positive COVID, juror and then all being in the same room and deliberating. So that was my understanding, that it has to do with this positive COVID individual. And there was the alternative basis for the new trial because of the fear that they would rush through the deliberations.
So the motion for mistrial specifically has absolutely nothing to do with juror number 29. It has to do with the statements of other jurors who are vaccinated, are not positive, but they're worried about the juror who actually did test positive.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Now, when the objection was made, the objection wasn't specific in the sense that the attorney did not state that the reason for their objection is they didn't believe that juror was disabled under the statute. And that's what you're arguing today, right?
Well,
that
yes.
Unvaccinated status is not a disability. But that wasn't articulated at the trial level, right?
Your Honor, the objection was to continuing without the full 12. So I think it's at least implicit that it's because she dismissed this juror in violation of the constitutional right to a 12-member jury.
But that is a bare objection. I object to not continuing with the full 12 without any real explanation with regard to the objection, because all the explanation deals with the mistrial with regard to the other matters. So
yes.
We're supposed to parse that to where the beginning of the objection is one thing, the actual argument with regard to ostensibly that objection deals with completely different ground.
So actually, Your Honor, in the record, so the trial court rendered him disabled, specifically said, I deem him disabled under Article 3629. And the trial court will proceed without juror 29. That was the trial court's statement on the record. And then the defense objected to moving forward without the 12-person jury. So I submit that does satisfy preservation requirements, especially considering the trial court stated later, your request for a mistrial is denied and your objection to releasing Larry Riviera is denied. Our argument is that
there were two specific rulings.
He should not have, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So to understand how the trial court got to this dismissal, the trial began on a Tuesday. The case continued until Friday, just before closing arguments. The trial court recessed for the weekend. And on Monday, that's when the juror had notified the trial court, juror 31, notified the trial court that she had tested positive for COVID and was asymptomatic, but she sent over a doctor's note advising that she was cleared to return on Thursday. So the trial court recessed, arranged for the remaining 11 jurors to receive COVID testing at the Tarrant County Health Department, and when the court resumed on and decided to wait until the positive COVID juror could return on Thursday. So on Thursday, that's when the trial court learned that all 12 jurors showed up present and ready to continue with closing arguments, but the one juror number 29, who was unvaccinated, that the trial court discussed because he was unvaccinated and there was this COVID quarantine period of 10 days for him, that's how the trial court deemed him disabled under Article 3629 and continued with less than the constitutionally required 12-person jury. So the case law interpreting the exception to this constitutional requirement interprets a disability as a physical, mental, or emotional impairment that inhibits the juror from fully and fairly performing the functions of a juror. So a physical disability most often will be an illness. The flu, a stomach virus, high blood pressure requiring hospitalization have all been cases that have applied this exception. Here, Mr. Riviera was not sick. He did not have COVID. However, there are at least two cases where a juror has become jailed in the course of trial. And so the state's argument, at least in their brief, is that this is the equivalent of a jailed juror, that because the Tarrant County Health Department ordered him to quarantine, this is the equivalent of being jailed. So we submit that there was not an order of quarantine in the sense that he was legally required to stay at home and quarantine, that health departments, they do have the authority to order individuals to quarantine under the Health and Safety Code, but they must follow the statutory requirements to do so. And that requires an order in writing, that requires that it be delivered to the individual in hand or through certified or registered mail. The individual is subject to court order for violating it, and it's actually a Class B misdemeanor for violating a health department's
But we're still in a situation where none of that, we're basically, looking back at your brief, you're not even complaining about the denial of the mistrial, period, end of story.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You're treating that as a separate and distinct issue that you haven't raised.
Yes, okay. Your Honor.
So we're looking at a bare objection to a ruling, literally almost something like in the old days, please note our exception, something of that nature, and then that is sufficient possibly to preserve error possibly, but there's nothing about what you're just now arguing, which is she said there was an order, there couldn't have been an order, et cetera. All of that comes in with regard to the motion for new trial. Would that be correct? Because there's no discussion of any of that stuff on the record. If we're going to treat that objection as the preservation point, there's literally nothing else fleshing out that objection, because the mistrial is on something totally different.
Yes, Your Honor. The mistrial is a separate issue. This is simply the proceeding with only 11 jurors instead of the constitutionally required 12-person jury to dismiss a juror for a disability and proceed with less than the constitutionally required, which was objected to at
so
trial.
How did the trial court become aware that the concern by the defendant was that this juror did not have a disability?
How did the trial court become aware of the defendant's concern?
Complaint that this juror did not have a disability under statute.
I think that, Your Honor, I think it's that the trial court dismissed him for being unvaccinated and for having this quarantine period, and then there was an objection to that dismissal.
So you're saying that because the ruling was so narrow?
Exactly, yes, Your Honor.
A general objection would suffice without articulating to the trial court, Judge, we don't think unvaccinated statute rises to the level of disability.
Your Honor, I think that the preservation requirements require that the trial court, that you make a ruling in the trial court, or excuse me, that you make an objection and that the trial court understand the basis of the objection.
Be aware of what the nature of the objection is.
Yes, Your Honor. So because the trial court dismissed him because he was unvaccinated and the trial court stated on the record he was subject to an order of quarantine,
But how is the judge supposed to understand, having articulated the ruling and the grounds for the ruling, how is the judge to understand what is incorrect about the basis for the ruling? Sure, but assuming what you're saying is true with regard to preservation, she knows that the defendant now understands he thinks she made a mistake. But there's no articulation of what basis of that mistake is, other than I disagree with you, Judge.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the basis is that the trial court specifically states that she was dismissing him. She references the statute, which has to do with a physical, mental, or emotional disability, and she discusses how he had an order of quarantine. And so then by the trial counsel objecting to proceeding with only 11 jurors, I think it's that the trial court understands that. And in fact, when the trial court overrules the objection to proceeding without Mr. Riviera, I think that the trial that's satisfies the preservation requirements.
Okay. Preservation requirements with regard to, I'm making a complaint about that ruling, okay? But there's literally nothing in there other than I disagree with you, and everything you're arguing, both in the motion for new trial and on appeal, is after the fact backfill, literally. Okay, so what authority do you have that under these circumstances, all you have to do is note your exception, and then you can come back later on in the motion for new trial, and then flesh it out with the arguments that you're making now?
Your Honor, our authority is just simply that it was all understood on the record that the trial court was dismissing this juror for a disability, that the defense attorney objected to that dismissal based on a disability and received an adverse ruling on that, and therefore there is an error that we raise that's a constitutional violation of a jury of 12.
Okay.
So we do submit that this is not the equivalent of a jailed juror, because there was no, yes, the trial court did discuss on the record that he was ordered by the health department to quarantine, but it wasn't an order in a legal sense, legally requiring him to. As I mentioned, the health departments, they do have the ability to do so, but There's no evidence here that there was a written order in the record. The trial court did not refer to a written order in the record. The juror showed up. I would submit if he had a written order saying he was subject to a Class B misdemeanor.
There wasn't any specific objection to the lack of a record, though, was there?
No, Your Honor, but the...
I understand how difficult that may be to object to the fact that the judge is making a ruling based upon something that's not in the record, that mm-hmm. she herself is putting in the record based upon her private conversations with somebody else. But that would be a place to object so that you would have an opportunity to examine the court's ruling in that regard. Mm-hmm. And that might also put the court on notice that maybe, just maybe, she's making the wrong decision with regard to what she's relying on factually.
Yes, Your Honor. There is a specific case from the Court of Criminal Appeals that actually addresses this 3629 exception, and it's that the trial court's finding must be sufficiently supported by the record. That's what the Court of Criminal Appeals has discussed, and that's Scales v. State. I don't believe it's in our brief. It's 380 Southwest 3rd, 780 from 2012. In order to support its judgment, the trial court must make a finding sufficiently supported by the record that the jury was disqualified or unable to perform the duties of a juror.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Excuse me. May it please the court, my name is Ann Grady. I represent the state in this matter. Your Honors, a trial judge has broad discretion to maintain orderly trial proceedings. In addition to that, we have this overlaying of the pandemic in which trial judges have been charged with the responsibility and the discretion to take reasonable measures to protect participants in trials, not only jurors, but court staff as well. And whatever those reasonable steps may be is left to the trial judge's discretion to discern based upon what she sees happening in her courtroom
but
and in her county.
But that's not what the trial court said in the record. The trial court said that their disability was based upon the quote-unquote order of the county that quarantine must stay in place.
That is correct. A trial court.
Not that I'm worried that you might actually expose me or the rest of my staff or any of the other people, but just based on the order itself.
The order specifically to quarantine. What is a quarantine? It's an effort to protect others from the spread of the infection. That's the we don't quarantine for asthma or MS. We quarantine for a virus that is contagious. And that is part of her charge under the OCA's best practices and the emergency orders to take reasonable steps to do that. And so when she learns this information.
Weren't the emergency orders subject to constitutional limitations?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't this a constitutional question?
Whether the jury is disabled or not becomes a constitutional question.
The right to a jury of 12 is a constitutional right.
Yes, but with an exception for a disabled juror. And that's in the Constitution and it's in the statute that the right to a jury of 12 is not absolute. It is subject to unless a juror becomes disabled. And that decision, whether the juror is disabled, is one left to the sound discretion of the trial judge. Here, what the trial judge knew and what she based her decision on was that Juror 29 was not just unvaccinated. Juror 29 had been exposed to COVID-19. That's not in dispute. She based it on the fact that the Tarrant County Public Health had ordered him to quarantine for 10 days. She based it on, and that 10-day quarantine period would have been familiar to her as a guideline that's nationwide and statewide as the 10-day quarantine period in place, which is also not in dispute on appeal. In addition, she knew.
Where on the record are we talking about the other jurors and why they happen to be vaccinated, why that 10-day quarantine didn't apply to them?
I believe that's...
The exposure was the same to everybody.
Correct. On page 4 of Reporter's Record 8, the judge is explaining the current situation. She's also in Reporter's Record 7 and 8, she references the fact that she's in communication with Tarrant County Public Health. In Reporter's Record 7, that's the one from Monday, August 6th, she says, we have an exposure. I have been in contact with Tarrant County Public Health to arrange for testing of all the jurors. So that shows she is in communication with Tarrant County Public Health. They get tested and she gets the results back. And before I forget, I want to note that when on August 5th, when she dismissed the juror, and she's explaining all of this on the record, she says, lastly, juror 29 was the only remaining unvaccinated juror, showing all the others are vaccinated. He's the only one not vaccinated. He also tested positive as of yesterday, but he was ordered by the Tarrant County Public Health Department to remain in quarantine for 10 days since he is not vaccinated. Based upon that order, the court is making a finding that he is disabled for purposes of Article 36.29. So what I want to call the court's attention.
So number 29 had tested positive?
No. He had not. As defense counsel corrected.
But the way that read is that 29 tested positive.
Correct. She was misspeaking. And the point I want to make is that defense counsel spoke up and corrected that misstatement. He said, the next page, I just want to make sure for the record, I believe the court stated that Mr. Rivera had tested positive. The court, I'm sorry, he tested negative. That was a misspeak. And she was corrected by defense counsel on that aspect of this finding. He did not, however, correct this idea of there have been an order. That was not corrected by defense counsel. And so the court's order is the court's dismissal finding is based on exposure, unvaccinated status, and a quarantine order. And I want to point out also that even if there were no order, which is a cornerstone of the claim on but in both the motion for new trial and on appeal, this idea that it was her policy only, that there's no record support for the idea that it's her personal policy. There is record support for the idea that that this is part of the guidelines in place. She said that she personally said, I have been in communication with the Tarrant County Public Health, and that there's no record support to refute that fact, the idea that there was an order. But I want to point out that even if it were a mere recommendation, that's kind of the whole claim on appeal, that even if Tarrant County Public Health merely recommended a quarantine period of 10 days, that merely brings Judge Beach's ruling within the zone of reasonable disagreement. The 10-day quarantine rule is a CDC guideline.
Well, it's the distinction between the county quarantining him and the judge quarantining him. That seems to be a fairly interesting distinction. Would you not agree?
I would say that the juror is, if the juror has
and
been
she's
told.
She's quarantining him when he's asymptomatic, he's not positive, so she's effectively quarantining him because of his exposure, he's exposed and he's not vaccinated.
I might quibble with the word quarantine. I think if the Tarrant County Public Health has said you should quarantine for 10 days, they're the ones saying quarantine in place. It's up to the juror to abide by that by staying home. It's up to the judge to not dishonor that recommendation by, I would use maybe the word isolate. The judge is now required to take reasonable efforts. That's when the emergency orders kick in. What reasonable efforts is she charged with providing in her courtroom for a juror that's been exposed and has been advised, if you will, to quarantine for 10 days? That at least brings it within that she is not acting arbitrarily or without reference to guiding legal principles, which is the hallmark of an abuse of discretion. She's acting within guidelines. That makes it within the zone of reasonable disagreement in terms of the dismissal. The defendant relies a great deal on cases like Allen for the idea that it's up to the juror to decide whether he feels able to continue. It's really not up to the judge, to the juror. It's up to the judge. There are circumstances where maybe it's up to the juror, but there's numerous cases in which the juror says, I think I can come back tomorrow. With this is a UTI, but I get them all the time. I've taken my medication. I can be back tomorrow. And the judge does not take the juror's feelings on that into account. The juror is currently unable to proceed, and the juror is dismissed, and the trial continues. Even in the case Allen, if I can find it. All right, I'll try to remember. In the case Allen, that is relied upon heavily by the defendant for this idea that it's the juror's feelings that control. That's the 1976 case. The juror, prior to any testimony being heard, felt tightness in his chest and was not able to sleep. He went to the doctor's office. He did not see a doctor. The nurse took his temperature, and he had a temperature, and he got a doctor's note saying he had the flu. So when he came in, he, the juror, would not say that he felt disabled, but he did not want to contaminate the jury. He had already been asked to stay on the other side of the room, and he acknowledged that it would be a hardship and be detrimental to his physical being, and he asked to be excused. The court excused him not just because of his personal feelings, but because of the physical well-being of the other jurors. So we see numerous cases in which it's not just whether this juror feels okay right now, but whether this is a problem of exposing the entire jury to illness.
Was that a rationale for the decision, though? The fact that they raised 2 points, but did the reviewing court hone in and say that it is absolutely permissible for the court to consider the other jurors' viewpoints?
Are you saying in the Allen case? Yes.
That was part of the holding. It wasn't just part of the fact pattern.
I have it down. I don't have the physical case in front of me, but I have it in my notes that the trial court ruling was based on that excused Weaver based on his condition and the physical well-being of the other jurors.
The trial court did it for 2 reasons. But on appeal, did the appellate court say both reasons are valid or just uphold it on one?
It just upheld.
Okay.
Perhaps the court shouldn't quote me on that and double check. But that case from 1976, there's other cases in which, actually, that would be a very interesting question. Forgive me, Your Honor, I should have printed the entire case. I guess I'm going to go back to the UTI case in which she's saying I can come back. I'm able to come back. There's other numerous cases, stomach issues, where the juror's not even in the courtroom. No inquiry is made to the juror. How long do you think you'll be feeling ill? Lopez, Moore, Edward, the juror merely said, I have childcare issues. There was no inquiry into the juror's subjective feelings. How do you feel about that? So ultimately, I think the main point I'm making is that this is not a juror decision to make. It's a judge decision to make, whether the juror is suffering from a condition. And it is broader. Appellant's brief at 19 concedes that this is not just physical, emotional, psychological issues. This is any condition that inhibits a juror from fully and fairly performing the functions of a juror. So here we have the juror suffering from the condition of being exposed to the virus, which there's numerous things in the OCA guidelines about if jurors have been, if anybody has been exposed, what do we do? And under a quarantine directive.
It's really only the quarantine directive that prevents the juror ostensibly from being able to perform the functions. It's not the unvaccinated status. Or the exposure, because everybody had that. Or they didn't have the unvaccinated status, but they had the exposure. And so the only thing that you can hang your hat on is this quarantine order or directive or whatever you want to call it that would disable this juror. Otherwise, this juror is being treated differently than the other jurors who were also exposed.
True, but there's, again, in the Exhibit E attached to the motion for a new trial was the May 21st best practices, which repeatedly makes distinctions between vaccinated and unvaccinated. Vaccinated versus unvaccinated can affect, especially given the information we knew.
Not the ability of that juror to do their job, but maybe the other juror's ability to do their jobs if they got exposed, right?
There's that. There's
but if they
the,
were vaccinated at the time, what basis did they have any fear whatsoever of getting exposed? Of the exposure, because at the time the CDC was telling everybody that vaccination would prevent catching it. Of course, we now know that is utterly incorrect, but that's not something that's anywhere in the record. Mm-hmm. So on what basis is she's just essentially saying that because he's unvaccinated and because there's been exposure and he might become incapable of deliberating, or I'm a little bit worried about the other vaccinated, completely protected jurors being a little bit uncomfortable with the fact that the government might not have actually been telling them the truth about the wonderfulness of their vaccinated status. So, but again, there's nothing in the record about why she did it other than just an off reference to she's been in contact with the county.
That is correct. That's where I don't know that the state's preservation argument is the strongest argument in the case, because it does at least preserve the error of going forward with only 11 jurors portion of it. But by not raising these contentions at the time, that is part of why the record is as sparse as it is. And so if we are left a little bit wondering.
So the state's briefing with regard to mistrial is not available on this type of situation, because we've had the clarification today that there's no complaint about the denial of the motion for mistrial. That's a separate and distinct issue that was raised at the time. We don't need to consider that authority either. We're really just boiled down to preservation with regard to whether or not note my exception is sufficient, and two, whether or not the record, whether it can be brought up in the motion for new trial and the record developed there for purposes of a new trial. Because otherwise, we've just got the judge saying, basically, look, I've talked to the county. The county says he needs to quarantine, so I'm going to declare him disabled. That's essentially all we've got on the record.
My argument is, if that is all we have, that is sufficient to bring her decision within the zone of reasonable disagreement. When you have a county saying he should quarantine for 10 days, that's enough. What that means is stay home, have food delivered.
And that's why the reference to the jailing is, that's effectively a determination by a state actor that restricts the freedom with regard to that particular individual, which can disable them.
Yes. Combined with a judge being charged with things like, if she had let him stay, there's no way to isolate him. If he had said, Judge, he should be able to stay, and maybe you can make alternative arrangements, then that could have triggered Judge Beach from saying, well, I have no separate men's room to assign to him. I have no what bailiff am I going to assign to watch him? Am I going to have him closed circuit TV deliberating? There's no discussion of what alternatives there would have been. And for all of these, there's no separate elevator to put him in. There's a whole court, and that's in the OCA's best guidelines, to take that into consideration. When you have courthouses that have multiple courtrooms, and someone has been exposed, is there any way of isolating them out from elevators? So all of these things make him unable, as Your Honor is saying, unable to come to the courthouse at all. That's what makes him disabled from participating fully and fairly in this trial. Apart from the idea that the court has already, to go back to Your Honor's point about the mistrial is not part of the case, it is insofar as it establishes some of the facts here, where the jurors' concerns that there's been an exposure were addressed by the judge by providing a courtroom across the hall for them to deliberate in, fully spread out. So there, she's already made that extra effort for their deliberations to be uber socially distanced, if you will. What additional measure could she have taken to allow juror 29 to fully and fairly participate in the functions of a juror when that's where the bar is? So the jurors are on edge, and if they are already on edge and distracted, what more distraction could how much more distraction could we pile onto this situation by letting the unvaccinated juror come back in?
Well, she could have taken judicial notice that the jury rooms in this building are basically closets, which we could all three,
airless,
I think,
closets.
Take that. Yeah, so anyway.
Airless closets. Before I forget, I don't know if the court is inclined to do this, but what else the judge knew at the time, and at the time is crucial. Griffin, at the time, what the judge knew at the time includes the fact that this was in the midst of the Delta spike and that death rates were going up in Tarrant County. No, there's nothing in the record to support that, but that was everywhere. And the court could take judicial notice of those facts from the Tarrant County public website that is currently still up, showing the spikes in both of those scales.
Was there any discussion whatsoever about whether or not the vaccinations that had been obtained by the other jurors actually dealt with Delta at that point in time?
There's nothing on the record about that.
So there's nothing on the record about any of the vaccination status of anybody else or whether the exposure, because we now know in hindsight, which we can't use, that the vaccination status with regard to an early vaccination didn't necessarily protect you from a later variant. So we don't even have any idea when their vaccinations were or anything like that. So for us to take judicial notice of something of that nature actually would just kind of open a can of worms, because there's nothing to indicate that the judge was actually paying any attention to that, or let alone even knew that that might be a concern at the time.
About the Delta spike, you're saying?
Yes. Or that the vaccines that had been obtained by the other jurors would actually, in fact, protect them from the Delta variant. We don't even know if the juror who actually tested positive for the Delta variant or from an earlier variant.
True. No, I think that what Judge Beach was doing was exercising her discretion within the guidelines, within the facts as she knew them, and with the guidelines in place, and making a decision. She did not need to postpone to find out how things would unfold. She was making a decision at that moment after already granting 3 days' worth of a delay in this trial, that this juror was unable to participate fully and fairly and to function as a juror, and therefore he was dismissed. And that is a ruling within her discretion to have made, not only with regard specifically to taking reasonable efforts under COVID, but just more generally the discretion afforded judges to make these types of decisions to facilitate the orderly proceedings of their trials.
And bottom line, there's absolutely no evidence in this record that juror number 29 was in fact in any way physiologically or psychologically impaired or disabled, and under that understanding, the sole disablement is the exposure and how the county understood it should be handled and the authority that the trial judge had under the emergency orders from the Supreme Court.
Yes, but as appellant concedes in her brief at page 19, decisional law is clear that in addition to those categories that appear in the statute, it's broader, that it's any condition that impairs the juror's ability to fully and fairly function as a juror. That's where the jail cases come in. That's where UTIs, but yes, I'll be better tomorrow, come in. I have a temporary gastrointestinal issue, but I could be in later. It's anything that impairs the juror at that time from fully and fairly functioning as a juror, and that encompasses that those case laws, although that's never been applied to this context before, this qualifies his exposure, his unvaccinated status, and the order slash directive or recommendation, whatever it might be, the guidelines provided by more than one authority that Judge Beach was within her discretion to take into consideration when making this decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I do think that it has to fall within the Article 3629 of the Code of Criminal Procedure by being a physical disability, a mental or an emotional disability. Here, it was not a physical disability. There's no illness. The jail jurors fall into the statute because it is a physical disability. They are physically prohibited from coming into court and serving.
Why would not a quarantine situation be a physical restriction under those circumstances? Is it your position that it actually literally has to be actual restraint of movement, almost a habeas situation before that disability, that would be considered to be disability?
No, Your Honor. If the individual does have COVID, that's a separate situation. Here, you know, Mr. Riviera did not have COVID. He was not sick. As far as being subject to quarantine recommendations, had he decided that he was going to follow these recommendations and he let the court know, I am unvaccinated and there's the CDC recommended 10-day quarantine period, I am uncomfortable coming to court, potentially, you know, having had, you know, within the time frame where I could get symptoms of COVID or I could give it to another juror, I would be so, this falls under like the emotional or mental disability. I would be so concerned that I would be giving it to others or so concerned that I would be, that I actually do have the virus, that I would not be able to fully and faithfully perform my duties as a juror, then that is a situation where I think that this Article 3629 could come into play. Or if he had actually had the COVID virus and he could be physically disabled in that sense. As far as was he ordered or not, he chose to come to court. He was ready and willing to continue on and in lieu of the recommended guidelines. As far as it being an order of quarantine, although the trial court does state he was ordered to, I think that, you know, there's a judicial notice element here of common knowledge. We have not been subject to mandatory quarantine orders in this county, that the health department has not resorted to using the statutory authority to order someone in writing under the health and safety code requirements to quarantine. That the trial court was just using this term order, but really it's these guidelines that, again, Mr. Riviera was not, that he chose not to follow. And so otherwise, as far as does he fall under 3629, we submit that he does not, that the trial court was without her discretion to do so. And as far as emergency orders or the governor's executive orders in place at the time giving the trial court the authority to not follow the constitutional requirement, the governor's orders actually specifically state that that state agencies cannot inquire into vaccination statuses, and there's nothing that gives the trial court the authority to go against this constitutional limitations.
This was not an was not raised. There was no objection. How did the court become aware of the vaccinated status of juror number 29?
Your Honor, I was not part of the trial, but and I don't know how. Now, I do know that we have an affidavit from the trial attorney stating that the trial court had inquired into the vaccination status of the jurors, and that's in our attached.
But if that's improper vis-a-vis the governor's order, that was not a basis for either the original objection or the motion for new trial.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
In other words, there's not a complaint as part of the motion for new trial.
Yes.
That the only basis for excluding him and declaring him disabled was based upon information that was improperly obtained by the trial court.
Right, yes, that's not part of the appeal. And then the Supreme Court's orders at the time did state that, you know, courts can make reasonable accommodations to account for exposure, to prevent the staff from being exposed. But again, it is subject to constitutional limitations. So we submit that the trial court was without her discretion to dismiss this juror and request that the case be remanded for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, we thank you very much for your argument. It was very helpful to us. Your case has now been submitted, and you're free to go about your business. Thank you.